Coming up on this week's Let Me Explain, the city that banned salt. We know it's bad for us in excess, yet it tastes so delicious. So what happened when salt was taken off the table? Well, let me explain.
Let Me Explain with Sean Defoe, a News Talk original.
Hello and welcome to the podcast, and thanks for tuning in. Don't forget to subscribe on the News Talk app or wherever it is you get your podcasts. With the Democratic National Convention underway in the United States, why not take a scroll back and listen to our explainer on just who Kamala Harris is, her background, how she got to where she is now, which is being formally chosen as the nominee for the Democratic Party to contest the presidential election to go for the biggest job in the country. That campaign itself may be getting pretty salty, but it's a different type of salt to what we're talking about on this episode. We all, I think, vaguely know that salt is bad for you in high doses and small quantities. It's okay, and actually something our body needs. But we have evolved a craving for it as well, in particular over the last decade, as high amounts of salt have been dumped into ultra-processed food. So let's go back to the beginnings and why do we use salt in the first place?
Yes, so it's essentially preservation to keep our food lasting longer.
This is Aisling Larkin, a chef and mindful eating coach.
Obviously, it does two things. It draws the moisture out of food. So when there's no moisture and there's no water content, no bacteria can grow, essentially. And then from the other perspective is it can kill microbes as well. So it's like double function in terms of preservation. So you have foods like, you know, you've got your beef jerkies, you've got your cured meats, you've got obviously pork, bacon, and then so it's your sodium nitrate. And then you would have things like pickled cucumbers, pickled vegetables. So we use salt for so much.
So salt goes back thousands of years for the use of preservation, but it had been a valuable commodity all through the years as well. For centuries, salt was used as a form of currency, such was its value. Indeed, the word salary apparently takes its root from salt. The ancient Latin word salarium literally meant the amount of money given to a Roman soldier in order to buy salt. Ever wonder where the phrase not worth his salt came from? Well, again, the use of salt as money, although in this case it comes from the ancient Greeks trading salt for slaves. And if a slave wasn't particularly impressive, well, he wasn't worth his salt. You can also go back to our episode from just before Christmas for the origins of the phrase salt of the earth. In short, salt has been around a long time. In fact, it has more than 30 references in the Bible. But the way that we consume salt has changed dramatically. It's gone far beyond just a preservative. In fact, Aisling says common table salt actually could have quite a bit of crap added to it.
So we have our table salt, which is the cheap and kind of maybe nasty stuff, you might consider it that. It has been potentially bleached. It has anti-clumping agents in it. It might have iodine added back into it. Look, it is what it is. It does the job. If you were baking, you would use that because it can be quite easily kind of an accurately measured, and it makes chocolate taste more chocolatey and vanilla taste more vanilla because it's salt. That's what it does.
And of course, separate to that, quite a bit of crap food has salt added. Salt, sugar and saturated fats in constructed food are being blamed for all sorts of health issues. And what do I mean by constructed food? Well, mostly a new phrase that has crept in over the past 5 years, ultra-processed food. The definition varies from food that is basically created in a lab with all sorts of gums and stabilizers and other things to what many people would probably consider a harsh enough definition, that being any food which contains more than one ingredient you wouldn't find in a relatively normal kitchen. Take a look at a loaf of bread, for example, that you'd buy in a shop, and chances are it will have upwards of 15 ingredients, some of which you won't be able to pronounce. And this is, well, quite a bit of a problem for our health. Here's author of Ultra Processed People, Chris Van Tulliken, outlining why it's having an addictive impact on us, including an anecdote about his own daughter.
But the biggest harm really is because ultra processed food is addictive. Now, food addiction for a long time is very unfashionable. It's problematic because inextricably tangled up with the idea of addiction is the idea of abstinence. You can't propose something be addictive if you can't then propose being abstinent from it. So food addiction for a long time was considered a behavioral addiction. And yet the substance itself, and there will be people in this audience who recognize this in themselves, the substances themselves do feel like the thing that drives the addiction. And the definition is the use of a substance continues despite knowledge of harms, despite repeated attempts to quit. This is a picture of Lyra eating Cocoa Pops. Lyra can eat, she's now six, and she can eat 5 adult portions of Cocoa Pops. If you look at those traffic light labels on Cocoa Pops, you'll see there are 2 oranges and 2 greens. It's a relatively healthy food. Now, that's if a grown-up eats 30 grams. If a 6-year-old eats more than 120 grams, all those lights obviously turn red. When she's eating, it's kind of hilarious, but it's also as if she's eating in a trance. So we have a huge amount of evidence that for many people, food is addictive. And I'm speaking to lots of senior research psychiatrists about the links between ultra-processed food and binge eating and other eating disorders. This evidence is still very early. It's really potentially traumatic and sensitizing to talk about, so I say that with caution. But I would say if you recognize that you have an addicted relationship with food, it will almost certainly be ultra-processed products, we are working very hard to try and work out how that works.
So already, there's lots of salt added to our food, often hidden and often in with other things like sugar and other fats. And often we then go and add more. Whether it's at the kitchen table or out for dinner, we reach for the salt shaker and add more again on top of your chips or on top of whatever it is you're having. Almost as habit sometimes, I find. I have found myself doing it before I've even actually tasted the dish. And you just think, you know what, a little bit of salt, could it do any harm? Well, actually, yeah, if you're adding it to every meal, it probably could. So across the world, in South America, one country moved to ban the salt shaker. Trinity professor Luke O'Neill spoke to News Talk from Montevideo, the capital of Uruguay.
There's no salt sellers in restaurants here. If you're going to go for a meal, there's no salt shaker at the table. And that got our attention. And it turns out they're looking after people's health in all kinds of ways. And salt, as you know, is a big risk factor. It's tied into oxygen as well, by the way. But high salt can be very damaging to us and cause an increase in blood pressure. And there's a big policy here to lower salt intake in people, either through things like no salt sellers in restaurants, loads of guidelines on lowering salt. And so they're kind of leading the world now on trying to control salt intake is one big example. And to try and encourage this, you get tax relief in restaurants if you have no salt sellers on your table and you offer salt-free options on the menu, for example, you know. And they're also, of course, they want to decrease the amount of salt in processed food. Is a big thing here, a big problem here, of course, as in Ireland, is high salt in things like processed foods. So here, they're introducing laws to lower the amount of salt in processed foods as well. So there's all kinds of incentives now to decrease salt availability to people.
And it's not just salt. If you go into a restaurant or a diner in this city, whatever the Uruguayan version of Eddie Rockets is, for example, you won't find ketchup or mayo or mustard or anything like that on the tables either. All those high sodium dips and sauces have been done away with from the tables. Uruguay has a big problem with salt. I mean, Ireland is well over the average recommended salt intake at about 5 grams per person per day. But in Uruguay, it's almost double that at 9 grams a day. Now, the rub, they can still get salt and these sauces. You just have to ask for it instead. So they're hoping by making it less convenient, people will start to stop, that the people are more like me, who refuses to complain in a restaurant if you don't have something, or the knife is a bit dirty. That's okay, don't worry about it. As opposed to my fiance, for example, who will very happily take people to task if everything is not quite as it should be, and I imagine would ask for the salt if she wanted it. Anyway, I'm going to get in trouble for that, I have a feeling. Anyway, anecdotal evidence seems to be that it is working. One restaurant owner from Montevideo who spoke to NPR said it's gone from about 20% of people not adding extra salt to their plate to just 20% asking for the added salt shaker. He also said that there's actually an unexpected health benefit for the staff in that they had to walk so many extra steps to hand out salt shakers from the kitchen that they were walking about an extra mile a day. So I wonder, would it work in Ireland? I mean, there's been such a backlash towards even the idea of making it mandatory to put calorie information on menus that I imagine a lot of people would call it nanny statism, but perhaps there is something in that idea of tax relief. If you put something on the menu that is a low salt option, a few more healthy options, I certainly find, while Dublin and the bigger cities, you can usually find something to eat that's healthy, that's low salt, easy enough. But it can be tricky elsewhere. I mean, recently we were in Killarney and we went to order food. And my lovely fiance ordered the superfood salad. And the waitress literally turned to get a better look at the menu and then said that was the first time it had ever been ordered. So supply and demand, I guess. Let me know what you think. Should we ban salt in Ireland in restaurants? Message me on X or Instagram with your opinions. Sean Defoe producing and presenting this week with series editor John Keogh. And I will chat to you next week.